And now here's Michael McKenzie with episode 3 of his Adventures in CPAP. Here he's off to see a sleep specialist.
Hey.
Hey, Michael, come in.
Thanks, man.
Good seeing you.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Mixed feelings about a few things.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Hello, I'm Michael McKenzie. Welcome to part 3 of Adventures in CPAP. And CPAP stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. Only things haven't been that positive. I was sick, but also I just, buggered up those times.
Yeah.
I was diagnosed as having a mild form of obstructive sleep apnea, where my throat is closing over a few times an hour when I'm sleeping, starving my blood of the oxygen it needs. It's a condition that used to happen more to blokes in their middle age who've put on a bit of weight, but these days younger people, men and women, are falling foul of sleep apnea because of global increases in obesity. So, sadly, I'm less and less alone in this predicament. Anyway, I brought along the SD card.
Yeah,
you'll see a few things on it.
Yep, we'll see how we go.
Yeah. What are the symptoms? Well, you wake up tired. Your ability to remain alert is often impaired. You tend to eat more unhealthily to try and stay awake. And it is linked to long-term health problems. So that's why I'm in week 3 of trialling a CPAP machine. It's called the Dream Station, and it keeps my airways open while I slumber.
I reckon out of a week, I'm probably using it maybe 4 times a week.
Okay. What's the reason for the gaps when you're not using it? Is it just you're in another room when you're asleep?
No, it's not that.
No? Okay.
In case you haven't met him before, this is Dustin. He's my pharmacist. And I've brought in my machine's memory card so I can show him the data from the last few sleeps with the CPAP. And I'm pretty sure he's going to be even more disappointed than he was last time.
I'm going to sleep with it fine. Going to sleep's not a problem.
Yep.
It's the waking up, and I find I'm waking up with the CPAP machine blasting at me at about 4:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem being then that the machine doesn't necessarily pick up that you're coming out of sleep and adjust itself accordingly.
But that's because you're in a fairly heavy sleep apnea event.
So the more severe my apnea is, the harder the machine's pushing air into my body to keep those vessels open.
That's right. The higher the pressure that's needed.
Dustin, what am I going to do? Because if it's waking me up after 5.5 hours sleep because it's desperately trying to stop me having an apnea event, either I'm going to wake up having had an apnea event without the machine anyway because my body's going to go, hang on, I'm not getting enough oxygen, or I'm going to wake up with the machine trying to compensate by pushing too much into me. So what do I do?
What I do in this case is, if you do wake up, just turn the machine off, turn it on again, and it will default back to the minimum of 4.
Okay.
And try and drift back off.
Okay.
So here it has dropped off before you've woken up. So it's not happening all the time. Here, look, this is a...
That's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I haven't seen that sort of pyramid shape before, but that's the way it goes. That's the way it is. So it's risen quite dramatically and fallen down again. And again, that peak at the end.
So at the moment, Dustin's going through night by night where I've used the machine, which, as he's found, is only just over a third of the time I could have.
Yeah, so this is where we have that discussion about compliance. Okay, so if we go back to...
Compliance, my lord, there's a word. Okay. So you're happy as long as I get 5 hours out of it, but every night, as opposed to maybe doing 7 hours on one night and nothing the next?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
All right.
And I think that's when you'll find that your symptoms of tiredness will reduce. So that's your mission now, Michael.
Shall I see you in a week then?
Absolutely.
Okay. Give me my SD card and I'm going.
Thanks, Michael.
So I did try. I really did. But look, it only lasted for 3 more nights. And I was still finding it incredibly hard going. I just kept waking up at 4:30 in the bloody morning. So I knew I needed help. I contacted the sleep centre at the Austin Public Hospital in Melbourne. I told Dustin I was going. Well, yeah. Don't feel bad. I don't want you to feel bad if you've if I let you down on this. But
no, and it's not letting me down. It's your health that I'm worried about here.
No,
so
I get it.
That's where it's at. So we know there is sleep apnea there. We want to treat it as best as possible.
Dustin printed off all the sleep data taken from the times I actually used the CPAP machine, and then armed with the dossier of my own failure, I entered the clinic to meet sleep specialist Mark Howard.
First page tells us about the days you've used it and haven't used it. So we can see that you've struggled a bit.
Mark is the director of the Victorian Respiratory Support Service at Austin Health, and he's kind of the bomb when it comes to sleep research. He's a specialist physician in respiratory and sleep medicine, and one of the areas of his focus is the impact of sleep disorders on driving and occupational health and safety. So Mark is really just a safe pair of hands, isn't he?
It's interesting that the responses to apnea can be very different. So they are very individual. Some people, from the way they feel, will have severe tiredness, maybe even with only mild apnea or certainly moderate apnea. But we also know that there can be people who genuinely are more resistant to that effect on the way they feel. I'll give you an example. If you put people without apnea in a laboratory and you keep them up all night, you'll get 20 or 30% of people who completely fall apart. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, if you do driving simulation, for example, they'll be falling asleep and they'll be crashing on a driving simulation. You'll get, another 60% of people who become a bit impaired and they're not driving as well as they normally would, but maybe not crashing all over the place. And then you'll get this small proportion of people who are more resistant to that. And in fact, remain fairly alert, at least, say, for 24-hour period. So the same thing probably happens in apnea, and that's an active area being researched at the moment, where some people are probably a bit more resistant to the impact of the apnea on its disruption to sleep and are less affected. They're not as tired compared to other people. We don't understand that very well, but it's becoming more widely recognised. And this plays then into your decisions around who really should have treatment or who will benefit from treatment, because you might find somebody who comes along more because of snoring, disrupting their partner's sleep, and with their arm twisted behind their back. And
in fact, they're let in by that partner, by the nose, through the door.
Correct, yes. But they're not there for any other reason. Some of those people will be tired, but they're just ignoring it or denying it. But there'll be some people who genuinely are not so impacted, even though they may have a mild or moderate degree of apnea.
Will apnea shorten your life?
Apnea is related to a higher risk of some severe diseases. So apnea increases your risk of heart disease, stroke, and high blood pressure.
Can I ask, just on that, while you say that, is that because when you are as tired as you often can be when you have apnea, you overcompensate by often having a bad lifestyle, bad diet, that may lead to the risk factors that contribute to heart disease?
Yeah. That's an excellent question. There is, when you are tired, you do indeed tend to eat worse food. You choose fatty foods. Your diet tends to be worse, and it is linked to putting on weight. So that's true. But there's a separate effect on increasing the risk for heart disease and stroke, really only in those people with moderate to severe apnea, though, not in people with mild apnea.
So saying, if I seek help and perhaps that help turns out to be a CPAP machine or some of the other devices which we're looking at here, does that mean I'll live longer?
To this point, science has not proven that the treatments will reduce those risks. So it's very clear that the risks are increased in people with moderate to severe apnea, but science has not proven that we can reduce them with our current treatments. In fact, a big Australian study, recently published study, didn't find any reduction in risk, particularly for heart disease. There may have been an impact on reducing stroke risk, but they weren't able to clearly identify that.
This begs the question, of course, why bother undertaking these kinds of ways of changing your sleeping behaviour?
Yeah. From a symptomatic point of view, it clearly increases drowsiness, fatigue, can impair mood and concentration. There's definitely a high risk of accidents. So for road crashes, somewhere between 3 to 5-fold increase in risk. And that's similar, you know, to an alcohol level at 0.05 to 0.08. So somebody who's chronically at that high risk, particularly in a high-risk occupation, such as a professional driver, you would want to treat them for that reason.
So, in fact, if you're a truck driver, there's every reason to believe that, in fact, seeking help for your apnea could keep you living longer.
Yes, exactly, but not necessarily through reducing your risk of heart disease.
No, simply from stopping you dying on the road.
Yeah, and it may be other people on the road that are injured by the accidents. Interestingly, for some of those industries, the work itself might increase their risk. Driving for prolonged periods, you're sitting down for prolonged periods of time, and that probably results in increasing weight and increasing your risk of developing apnea.
You've got a few other gadgets and paraphernalia here. Would some of these maybe fit my kind of example, my scenario?
Yeah, definitely. And firstly, I would double check, you know, we're happy that apnea is the main cause of the problem.
So you're still not happy with that?
I would ask basic things around how much sleep you're getting. So tell me when you go to bed and when you wake up.
Okay, I tend to sleep somewhere between 11 and midnight, but I might wake at somewhere between 6:15 and 6:45.
So it sounds like from that, at the most you might get 6 or perhaps up to 7 hours of sleep. Does that sound right?
Yeah, on work days that's probably as much as I get.
And do you wake overnight?
Yes, I get up and have a wee.
Yeah, just briefly and then back to bed?
Straight back to sleep.
Okay.
Mark really takes me through the bad decisions I'm making every night prior to going to bed. I'm going to sleep too late. I'm using screens in the bedroom. Hello? Having a blue light charging my mobile devices right next to the bed. Eating too much before sleep, which revs up my metabolism. Oh, and just in case you didn't know, drinking even moderate amounts of alcohol can really get in the way of your airways staying open all night. And then there's sleeping on your back versus your side.
So some people, particularly with milder apnea, may only have it present when they're sleeping on their back. And you can then use very simple devices to keep you sleeping on your side, and that may be enough to control the apnea.
Like what?
From as simple as a tennis ball in a backpack through to little devices that go around the neck and they have a vibrating mechanism. And when you roll on the back, they start to vibrate until you go back on the side. So they sort of train you to sleep on your side over time.
I hadn't heard of that. That's good.
Unfortunate thing for you, though, is there's not much difference between sleeping on your back and sleeping on your side.
So my snoring is nothing if not democratic.
Yeah.
I like to keep people awake around me in every position I can find. Next time in our final episode of Adventures in CPAP, Mark Howard and I talk mandibular splints and tongue electrolysis, and I ask if he's comfortable with pharmacies both diagnosing and treating sleep apnea and then selling CPAP machines. Plus, you'll meet an older woman and quite a young man who've both taken the CPAP route and never looked back.
The very first morning, the furniture got rearranged in the house, the house got spring cleaned. I couldn't stop myself. I was bouncing off the walls.
That was after the first night?
Yep, first night.
Michael McKenzie with the penultimate in his series Adventures in Sleep Apnea. You can hear the final episode next time in Life Matters, when you'll discover if Michael's still using the CPAP machine. And in the meantime, you can catch up on previous episodes and check the links to the Austin Sleep Centre, plus other information on sleep apnea via the Life Matters website.